Lebanon still faces challenges related to decolonization, with the lingering influence of French and even American imperialism. This is just one aspect of Lebanon.
Esta es una parte del Líbano. Pero también está la parte.
On the other hand, there are those who strive for sovereignty and independence, standing in solidarity with their Palestinian brothers. This represents the resistance of Lebanon, comprising democratic and popular forces from various parties.
Uno de ellos, el más destacado,
among them, Hezbollah stands out, having played a heroic role in sacrificing many of its founding leaders.
Los mejores líderes, los líderes fundadores, en esa resistencia.
In the fight against the Zionist occupiers.
El Líbano vive en una
situación. Lebanon finds itself in a very complex economic situation, with 44% of its population living below the poverty line. And in some rural areas, this figure rises to 62%. The country faces ongoing destruction from bombings carried out by the Zionist entity, which devastated homes, schools, hospitals, churches, universities, workplaces, and even agricultural lands.
Industria, inclusive plantaciones.
Despite these challenges, Lebanon continues to exist and embodies the spirit of solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Ser solidario con el pueblo palestino. Incluso producido inmediatamente.
Following the resistance action on October 7, 2023, Lebanon, through Hezbollah, opened a second front the very next day, October 8th, to alleviate the pressure of the attacks on Gaza and draw some of that focus towards itself. This act demonstrates a profound sense of solidarity, signaling that Lebanon stands with Palestine.
Claro, el Líbano.
Lebanon gained its independence in 1943, and by 1946, French troops had withdrawn.
De cualquier manera.
However, the Nakba in 1948 led to the displacement of nearly a million Palestinians. Many sought refuge in Lebanon, and the political and social landscape of the country has been significantly shaped by the presence of the Palestinian people, leading to an immediate expression of solidarity. Lebanon finds itself in a complex situation, caught between factions that still aspire to serve imperial interests, primarily those of France, and by extension the United States and pro-Zionist agendas. On the other hand, there is a significant and healthier segment of the population that's striving for national liberation, while also standing in solidarity with the broader liberation movements in Western Asia, especially the Palestinian people. We are confident that this small nation will discover its path and will consistently be a strong and united force in the resistance. The political parties aligned with this vision are likely to assert their perspectives, as the people demand it. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Huertas.
Soy Eduardo Huertas. La prensa hegemónica occidental.
Western mainstream media often portrays Lebanon as an oasis of European civilization that's been lost.
De civilización europea que se habría perdido.
It seems to have fallen under a sort of curse, straying from its promise of Western democracy and a French lifestyle. The reality is that contemporary Lebanon, since its independence in 1943, or rather limited independence, has stood in solidarity with Palestine. It has faced numerous aggressions from the Zionist occupiers of Palestinian land.
Independencia, una independencia que todavía es mezquina.
The Zionist occupiers have also faced their share of defeats in this confrontation. Lebanon is a country of both light and shadow. To discuss Lebanon today, its people, organizations, and resistance, we have Alex and Franz with us. He is a Catalan national, currently in Casablanca, working as an independent researcher and journalist, as well as an educator and political analyst for various international media outlets.
En varios medios de comunicación internacionales. Es coautor.
He's also a co-author of the documentary Palestine, The Murder Truth, Voices for Peace.
Por la paz. Bienvenido, Alex.
Alex and Franz, welcome to Black and White.
Negro y blanco.
Hola, Eduardo.
Hello, Eduardo. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Alex, ¿cómo podemos definir?
It's a pleasure. Alex, how can we characterize contemporary Lebanon, considering its social and political contradictions, along with the imperialist interference, primarily from France and still from the United States, in education and various other sectors, right? In that context, how is it possible for resistance and solidarity with the Palestinian people to take root, grow, and thrive?
Y la solidaridad con el pueblo palestino.
Bien, Líbano tiene una historia particular.
Well, Lebanon has a unique history. If we consider the insights of one of the prominent contemporary intellectuals, George Korn, who recently passed away, we can see how he examined Lebanon's diverse identity, particularly in relation to its mountainous regions and cities. Historically, Lebanon's population is made up of various communities, often referred to as confessional groups, and this confessionalism was indeed reinforced by foreign presence. The history of Lebanon dates back to the Ottoman Empire, when it was recognized as an autonomous entity. Following the dismantling of the Ottoman Empire, France took control of the region. French colonialism capitalized on the existing communitarianism and the various religious communities present. This dynamic has significantly contributed to the tensions experienced in Lebanon since its independence. The Civil War period is well known, and while it cannot be solely attributed to religious war, the vision of progressive or reactionary society was based on the existence of these religious communities, according to their own interests. It's important to note that foreign powers have been heavily involved in Lebanon, manipulating these interests for their own benefit. However, Lebanese nationalism exists beyond communal or religious affiliations, and this national identity is inextricably linked to the fate of the Palestinian people. It's crucial to address the issue of solidarity with the Palestinian people. Since the establishment of a Zionist regime in the region, over 700,000 Palestinian refugees were displaced, with more than 100,000 finding refuge in Lebanese society. This historical context significantly influences recent events, making the resistance against ongoing Zionist aggression towards the Lebanese people an essential aspect to consider.
Contra el pueblo libanés es un elemento muy importante a tener en cuenta.
Sí, en esa misma línea.
Yes, it's quite striking that the artificial creation of this entity known as the regime of Israel occurred so rapidly. Lebanon adopted a generally hostile stance, which is a significant aspect of its history. In 1948, Lebanon quickly aligned itself with the Palestinians, welcoming them and supporting their cause, which also led to the development of resistance. What influence, dear Alex, do you think the presence of Palestinians has had on shaping the current identity and mindset of Lebanon?
De lo que es el Líbano actual.
Bueno, yo diría que la cuestión, los derechos del pueblo palestino forman parte de la identidad de los pueblos árabes.
I would say that the rights of the Palestinian people are an integral part of Arab identity. This does not mean that there aren't national realities or distinct identities for each country. Otherwise, we would fall into the trap of the arguments made by Zionism and imperialism, which aim to erase individual identity. From the very beginning, Zionism sought to eliminate Palestinian identity, viewing them merely as Arabs who should be expelled to neighboring countries. However, Palestinian national identity is rooted in its own history and struggles. It's also important to remember that the Lebanese people have been affected since the inception of the Zionist project, particularly with the massacre at Hula, which marked the beginning of aggression. This cannot be erased from our collective memory.
Alex, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. We're back with Alex Anfrans. Alex, you were explaining to us the importance of distinguishing the nationality of the Palestinian nation as such, as well as the nationality of the Lebanese nation. You were delving a bit deeper into that. Please continue.
Estabas profundizando un poco eso. Adelante.
It's important to recognize that various factors contribute to the formation of a nation, but the feeling of belonging to that nation is something that cannot be erased by force. The Palestinian identity is very much alive. I have had the opportunity to witness this firsthand during my visit to the West Bank on several occasions. This national identity transcends religious beliefs and encompasses a vision for society, fostering dialogue that allows for future aspirations. In Lebanon, we witnessed the fourth military aggression, marking a historical pattern of invasions and a series of massacres against the Lebanese civilian population. The 2006 war was a significant Zionist aggression prior to the current situation, which ultimately ended in a defeat for the Zionist army. Hezbollah, recognized as the Islamic resistance of the Shia faith, made a significant mark as the only Arab military force capable of historically defeating that criminal army. The aim was to eliminate this example, but it's crucial to remember that within the doctrine of the Zionist army, the Dahiya doctrine, it was approved in 2006, named after a neighborhood in Beirut. This doctrine indicated that the civilian casualties in Lebanon or any other country were of little concern, meaning that attacks on civilian populations were not to be considered. This clearly aligns with the concept of indiscriminate attacks on civilians, which has also been evident in the ongoing offensive in Gaza for over a year, a situation that many international observers have already labeled as genocide.
Por muchos observadores internacionales ha sido ya caracterizado como un genocidio.
Así es, pero el genocidio ha sido de tal naturaleza.
Absolutely. The genocide has been of such a nature that it has profoundly affected the world, and this is crucial to recognize. Well, here is the question. How have the events in Syria influenced the capabilities of resistance groups, particularly Hezbollah and other Lebanese resistance forces, in terms of Lebanon's sovereignty and support for the Palestinian nation? How do you see the impact of the new situation in Syria? How does this situation appear in Western Asia?
Se ve eso en Asia Occidental.
Hay dos lecturas de la situación. Una basada en...
There are two perspectives on the situation. One can be described as a geographical viewpoint, focusing on the balance of power and international forces vying for control over territories and various strategic projects. The other perspective, which I favor, centers on the experiences of the people. Considering in Syria, it clearly represents a setback for the alliances and support that Syria has provided as part of what is seen as a resistance axis. This axis, as I explained, emerged and strengthened following the 2006 defeat and Hezbollah's subsequent victory. However, it's important to note that Hezbollah is not the only historical actor that has opposed the actions of the criminal Zionist army. For this reason, I emphasize the importance of recognizing that Hezbollah's formation dates back to 1982. History does not solely revolve around the geopolitical viewpoints of major powers, even if this situation leads to a reduction in support, particularly in terms of weaponry or infrastructure. It does not signify the end of resistance. The Lebanese people have shown resilience even before Hezbollah was established. They have consistently asserted their sovereignty and independence against both Zionist invasions and various regional actors that have interfered in their country's politics. It's important to recognize that Lebanon is currently facing one of the highest debt levels in the world. The nation has been devastated on multiple fronts economically, largely due to the influence of international players since the early 1990s. Despite this fragile situation, the Lebanese people have continued to resist, and that resistance is far from over. This is a struggle of the people, manifesting in various contexts and conflicts throughout history. It would be a mistake to underestimate the impact of NATO's Western offensive in the region, which poses a challenge to what could be seen as an alliance supporting the defense of both the Palestinian and Lebanese peoples. Nonetheless, this resistance will persist in one form or another.
The Secretary General of Hezbollah has urged the Lebanese state and its army to act courageously in confronting what he describes as Zionist aggression. This situation may benefit the more reactionary sectors, or perhaps Hezbollah's call will have a stronger impact in rallying Lebanese national unity against the Zionist entity. What are your thoughts on this contradiction at this time?
La entidad sionista. ¿Qué opinas tú sobre esa contradicción en este momento?
Bueno, en primer lugar, una cosa importante destacar es que...
First of all, it's important to highlight that Hezbollah as a resistance movement has strengthened its position within the fragile Lebanese political system. This system has been affected by various actors, particularly Saudi Arabia, which has played a significant role in Lebanon's economic politics alongside figures like Rafik Hariri. Their involvement in issues such as debt and privatization has led to a severely deteriorated economic situation, with over 80% of the population living in poverty. Additionally, the current crisis has resulted in nearly a million internally displaced persons due to the ongoing war. The arrival of Syrian refugees adds another layer to the situation. It's essential to recognize that despite everything happening, Hezbollah serves as a catalyst for a national resistance of the Lebanese people. Contrary to the label of terrorist often used in Western and Zionist propaganda, it represents a national struggle. While there are other progressive and resistance forces, the Lebanese army and the state currently lack trustworthiness. Over the past years, we've seen that there isn't a truly functioning Lebanese government, leading to a state of significant fragility. Nevertheless, the popular support for the resistance is a crucial factor. This support is often targeted by propaganda, which attempts to justify attacks on civilians by claiming that weapons are hidden among them, a claim that is simply untrue. The Israeli army has targeted over 50 hospitals and has bombed essential water resources, distribution centers, primary care facilities, and schools. Attacks on civilian infrastructure cannot be justified in any way. This reflects the strategy of a criminal army attempting to punish the civilian population, fully aware that this resistance movement has support among the people.
Absolutely, Alex. Israel must withdraw from this country's south by the January 26th deadline. However, the Zionist entity has completely disregarded, continuing with numerous atrocities. We really appreciate you being with us on this program here on Black and White. Thank you so much.
Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much to you.
Thank you.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is Arabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. iranradio.ir.
In the limelight.
Palestinians will stay on their land because to abandon it would be to betray all those who walked before them. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, U.S. President Donald Trump, never one for historical nuance, says the best plan for Gaza is to level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, paving the way for an American takeover and redevelopment project. Reform UK leader Nigel Farage has made equally ignorant remarks, imagining a Gaza with casinos and nightlife, speaking with the casual entitlement of a colonizer who believes history begins with his own indulgence. This is the logic of conquest. First, invade and destroy. Then, stand upon the ruins and declare the land empty. The long, blood-soaked tradition of colonialism speaks through these politicians. Settlers arriving on ravaged shores, massacring the natives, then announcing their discovery of a terra nova, a land with no past. But Gaza is not empty. Gaza has never been empty. What is unfolding before the world's eyes is not just war, but cultural genocide, a calculated attempt to erase Gaza's past so that its people's claim to the future can be denied. The Zionist regime's assault has targeted not only the living, but history itself. More than 200 heritage sites have been obliterated, not by accident, nor as collateral damage, but through a deliberate campaign to sever Gaza from its own past. Empire Empires rose and fell. Byzantines built churches, Ottomans raised mosques and madrasas, and the Crusaders seized Gaza only to be repelled by Saladin, who went on to liberate Al-Quds. In Gaza was born Al-Shafi, one of Islam's greatest legal scholars, whose longing for his birthplace never faded. He once said, "I yearn for the land of Gaza, though after our parting, silence betrays me." Yet now, amid the relentless Zionist American assault, a Fox News host dismissed Gaza's Palestinians as uneducated, parroting the same colonial rhetoric that has always been used to justify genocide. The aim is clear: dehumanize the Palestinians of Gaza, make them seem primitive, incapable, unworthy. By reducing them to nothing, the world is led to believe that when they are wiped out, no great loss has occurred. But the truth exposes the lie. Palestine has one of the world's highest literacy rates at around 97%. Before this war, Gaza had 12 universities that produced world-class scientists, doctors, engineers, and thinkers. All of these institutions have now been destroyed because an educated Palestinian is a threat, not to the world, but to those who wish to see them erased. In addition to targeting Gaza's schools, Israel has systematically killed academics, scientists, and scholars. The Zionist regime army has killed more than 90 university professors, along with hundreds of teachers and thousands of students. Gaza is not just a city. It is the backbone of Palestinian national identity. After the Nakba of 1948, when 750,000 Palestinians were driven from their towns and villages to enable the creation of the fabricated regime of Israel, Gaza became the last refuge for hundreds of thousands of people. From its camps and streets emerged the leaders of the Palestinian struggle. In Gaza today, a young boy sits amid the ruins, his small frame warped by the devastation around him. His voice rises, clear, unwavering, and beautiful. He sings, "My homeland, my homeland, my homeland is who I am." His poignant words cut through the silence, carrying decades of struggle and resilience. He's not just singing, he's declaring an unbreakable truth. Palestinians are the land. To erase one is to erase the other. The destruction of Gaza did not begin on October 7, 2023. It was always part of Israel's Western-backed plan. Two decades ago, Israeli strategist Aaron Sofer gave a chilling prescription for Gaza's future, saying, "When 2.5 million people live in a closed-off Gaza, it's going to be a human catastrophe. Those people will become even bigger animals than they are today with the aid of an insane fundamentalist religion. The pressure at the border will be awful. It's going to be a terrible war. So if we want to remain alive, we will have to kill and kill and kill. And day, every day." First, the Zionists sealed off Gaza. Then they starved it. Now they are trying to wipe it out. Trump's vision for Gaza is one of a colonial exterminator. This vision is not satisfied with mere death. The flattening of homes, the crushing of hospitals, or the silencing of classrooms where futures once took root. It is not enough to bomb the living. This vision seeks to erase the dead, to turn Gaza into a void, a land with no past, no memory, no people. This is the same cold calculus that justified the slaughter of millions of indigenous people in the Americas, the same ruthless hand that wiped ancient nations from the earth in Australia, always in the name of civilization and progress. Cities were turned to dust, languages swallowed by silence, histories rewritten by the conqueror's pen. Every shattered monument, every torn manuscript, every silenced voice is part of an old, familiar crime. One that does not merely kill, but also denies that there was ever anything there to kill in the first place. In Gaza today, a middle-aged man sits in silence on the ruins of his home, the dust of destruction clinging to his skin. When asked why he does not leave, why he remains in the shadow of devastation, his answer is quiet but unshaken, saying, "My son has died here. His blood was spilled here. His bones lie beneath this rubble. Sitting here, I feel close to him." In that single sentence lies the weight of 1,000 untold stories. To the world, Gaza is just debris, ruins to be cleared away. But to the Palestinians who live here, it is sacred ground where memories breathe beneath the dust, and the laughter of the departed lingers in silence. How can they abandon what little remains of their loved ones? How can they walk away when every shattered stone is a tombstone? The people of Gaza do not stand only upon the ruins of their homes. They stand upon the ruins of a stolen history, upon the memories of cities and villages wiped from the earth to make way for another's dream. A land without a people, they were told. "There were no such thing as Palestinians," declared former Israeli regime Prime Minister Golda Meir, a woman who herself had carried a Palestinian passport before the regime of Israel was born. "To be exiled is one crime, to be erased is another. And that is why Palestinians stay. Because to leave is to surrender to the lie, to allow history to be rewritten in their absence. They stay because every stone, every street, every ruin whispers their name. And to abandon it would be to betray those who walked before them. The world must not allow this cultural genocide to succeed. Gaza must be restored, not erased. Gaza is not ruins. Gaza is not nothing. Gaza is human heritage."
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God. Welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jahad, hosting this program. And Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the studio.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We are near the end of the month of Ramadan, and we have decided to talk about some of the jurisprudential laws based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei, but in relation to fitr. In other words, or in more particular, Zakatul Fitr, or the charity that Muslims and Shias, in fact, pay at the end of the month of Ramadan, well, as a kind of ritual tax to cleanse themselves, all right, and their soul, and finish off the month of Ramadan, actually, in one way or another. Well, so we have been discussing some of these jurisprudential laws, Sheikh Javid, and some of them remained. Let me start this episode by this question. You know, some women or wives of those men help them with the family expenses.
Right.
Right? And both of the parents are working.
Yes.
Right? So this wife actually helps her husband with the family expenditures. And, because her husband, for example, is incapable of meeting the family needs. Well, who pays the zakat of fitr for the family? Is it the wife who should pay, or no? Both of them should pay.
Well, as long as the woman is considered a dependent of her husband, it is her husband who is obliged to pay their zakat al-fitr, okay? Because he is the guardian of the family, and he is responsible for the zakat al-fitr of not only his wife, but also his children. And of course, it's not necessary for the wife, even if she has her own income and she has a job to do, she has her own assets and balance, bank balance, but it's not her responsibility to pay her zakat al-fitr. So it is the duty of her husband. As long, I'm telling this, it's very much, I need to be clear that as long as she is dependent and she is considered to be dependent on her husband, it is her husband who should pay the zakat al-fitr.
If she's not dependent?
He's dependent, and nor that of anyone else. For example, she's not relying on her father as well. then she must pay her own zakat al-fitr in this case.
I see. Yeah. But if another question or another scenario just related to this previous question, if the husband could not make ends meet,
right,
and the wife is somehow considered or can be counted as a breadwinner,
right,
of the family, then is it the responsibility of the wife to pay the zakat al-fitr?
Well, of course, the whole family. Yeah, of course it is, because when the man of the family does not have any money, he's not responsible to give any zakat al-fitr because he himself is poor. A poor person is not supposed to give any zakat al-fitr.
I see.
As long as he is considered by religious standard to be poor. And of course, if the wife can afford to pay, then it's necessary to pay the zakat al-fitr on behalf of the family and the family members.
And what about this question? Can this husband, the poor husband, receive the charity, the zakat al-fitr?
You know, the zakat al-fitr cannot be given to your dependent. For example, you cannot give your charity to your father, to your children, nor can they give their charity to you. Yes. But okay, if there are a few poor people,
right,
and they are so poor that none of them can afford, of course, it is recommended, not obligatory, that, for example, I have a few roommates, we live for example, there are a few, imagine there are a few unmarried people, they live together in the same room or in the dormitory, and they are poor, they cannot afford their living expenses. So it is said that, okay, one of them can give their zakat al-fitr to the other person, and that person can give the same zakat al-fitr to another person, and then to another person, and then the last one can give it to someone other than the very group of people.
I see.
Someone outside them.
I see.
That is the solution.
I have another relevant question, but I have to postpone it to the after break. Stay with us when we come back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away. Ya Allah, thank you for another chance standing at my door. Ya Allah, you've given me hope, delivered this gift right to my home. Marhab ya Ramadan, ahyi qulubana bil Qur'an. Welcome back to the program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio, with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We're still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to Zakat al-Fitr, based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, Sheikh Javid, if a man fails to pay Zakat al-Fitr, this ritual charity at the end of the month of Ramadan, how does this affect his wife and children?
Well, his wife and children have no particular obligation in this regard. And therefore, they need not to pay Zakat al-Fitr, you know, because they are not responsible. They are relying on the husband who does not pay the zakat al-fitr because he is someone who is negligent, or because of an accident he fails to pay zakat al-fitr. So in either case, whatever the scenario, the children and the wife of the family are not under any obligation to pay the zakat al-fitr in the very example that you generated.
I see. When does zakat al-fitr become due, Sheikh?
Well, I would say that once the appearance of the moon, you know, here I should make a mention of the controversy, or there's a kind of actually a difference of opinion when it comes to when one can pay zakat al-fitr. Now, there are some scholars who are of the view that zakat al-fitr can be given any time during Ramadan, whether it is before the 15th of Ramadan, in the early days of Ramadan, or after the near the end of the Ramadan. So there are some scholars like His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Sistani who's of the view that it can be paid any time during Ramadan. But of course, His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei is of the view that the Zakat al-Fitr cannot be paid any time during Ramadan. It must be set aside on the eve of Eid al-Fitr. So it can be given after it is set aside. So after, for example, he is of the view that once the appearance of the new moon of the month of Shawwal has been ascertained on the night preceding Eid al-Fitr, then one may set aside the amount of goods or money one must pay as Zakat al-Fitr. And of course, one, if one is planning to attend the Eid al-Fitr prayer, one must, as a measure of obligatory precaution, submit the amount due or at least set aside prior to the to performing the prayer. Okay, put it aside. Maybe you cannot find within that those 2 hours any poor person, so you set it aside and make sure that that money that you set aside will not be used by you yourself. That same very money that you have put aside must be kept for the poor person. For example, if it's old or new, you cannot replace it with new ones or with new notes, with new bills.
I see.
And that same bill must be paid to the poor
people. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javed. Let's take another break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
Followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Guide me all the way to your Jannah, Ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Shaita with our guest, the speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to the Zakat al-Fitr, based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javed, presuming there are people in another country who are more in need than those in our own country or the country of our residence, is it permissible to pay Zakat al-Fitr a few days early so that it may reach the recipients in the foreign country on time? Also, can we ask someone else or who lives in that particular country to pay Zakat al-Fitr to the qualified recipient on our behalf and then reimburse him later when we meet?
Right, that's a good question. Of course, as I said, that as a measure of obligatory precaution, you cannot pay the Zakat al-Fitr in advance. For example, if you just make a phone call to your friend and tell him to pay Zakat al-Fitr any time during Ramadan, that's not valid as a measure of mandatory precaution, ihtiyat wajib. But of course, it is permissible to ask someone to function as your representative, wakil, in paying Zakat al-Fitr to the poor people on your behalf on the same time day of Eid al-Fitr. For example, in the morning of Eid al-Fitr, someone who represents you, will function as an agent, as a representative, and will give the money on behalf of you to the poor person in another city or another country. And that's a good mechanism. And so you will reimburse him later on after you meet him, or maybe somehow you will send him the money. But that person in another country or in another town will function as your agent or representative and will give the poor people the Zakat al-Fitr on your behalf and also on behalf of your kids or your wife, your children. And of course, as I said, it is permissible to grant the amount that one will have to pay as Zakat al-Fitr to a qualified recipient during the month of Ramadan as a loan. As a loan, that's another solution, okay? You give some money as a loan to someone, and then when the beginning of the month of Shawwal has been ascertained, one can forfeit the loan as payment for zakat al-fitr. Okay, you will consider that the amount you lent to someone as qazul hasana, you will consider that as zakat al-fitr, and you will not demand it later on.
A very quick question, Sheikh. We don't have much time. What if we forgot zakat al-fitr or to pay it?
Well, if you have set aside the amount due, of course. Prior to noontime on Eid al-Fitr, but have forgotten to pay it due to some reasons, you need only to submit the amount you have set aside, okay? And of course, but if you have not even set aside the amount due on you, of course, you must, as a measure of obligatory precaution, pay your zakat al-Fitr to the qualified recipient. Qualified recipient means a poor and eligible person. But your intention in doing so should simply be to seek proximity to God, qurbatan ilallah, without distinguishing it as a timely action, ada, or an overdue action whose time has passed.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. And thank you, my listeners, my audience, for joining your own program, Islamic Laws. We've been talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to zakat al-fitr based on a fatwa issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Oh Allah, please unite us and guide us to paradise. Oh, and guide us to paradise. Ramadan is here. Allah's mercy is near. Time to give.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: dozens of Palestinians, including women and children, are killed in fresh Israeli attacks on Gaza. A medical charity expresses concern over the sharp rise in preventable skin diseases among children in Gaza amid the worsening water crisis there. And the U.S. presses ahead with its aggression against Yemen, launching around 20 attacks on Saada and Amran. You're welcome to our studios here in Tehran. Thank you so much for joining us. More Palestinian civilians fall victim to Israel's genocidal war on Gaza as the regime continues to pound the blockaded territory with air and artillery strikes. At least 8 Palestinians, including women and children, were killed after the Israeli warplane struck a residential building in Jabalia, north of Gaza. Fatalities were also reported after Israeli forces opened fire on Palestinians in El Mawasi refugee